Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the IBM Using WebSphere with DB2 V8 for Connection Pooling and Statement Caching conference call. Today's call is being recorded. For opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the conference over to Ms. Marianne Weirau. Please go ahead.
My name is Mariella Weirau, and I'm working in the DB2 COS development. My main focus is performance, solution performance, and also JDBC and SQLJ performance. And I like to walk you through recommendation for using WebSphere DB2 in terms of connection pooling and statement caching. I go on page 2 now. So what I want to do is walk you through the details of the DB2 connection pooling and connection concentration, as it was introduced by DB2 Connect and is also available for with a universal driver type 4 since version 8. And I also want to walk you through the details how WebSphere manages its connection pool and how both connection pools play together. So I want to walk you through some usage scenarios. And similar for the prepared statement handling, DB2 version 5 introduced dynamic statement caching, and I like to explain this in detail, and also how WebSphere manages its prepared statement object cache, and how those two caches play together in usage scenarios. And at last, I want to explain some code, or I want to explain the usage of the local dynamic statement cache with the option keep dynamic yes, and some considerations of how to use it. I go on to page 3. DB2 Connect version 6 introduced connection pooling on the client side for distributed connection, and what it introduced was the ability to reuse server agents or from a DB2 COS perspective threads into DB2 even the client disconnected from DB2 Connect. And in order to make this happen, there were agents introduced in DB2 Connect with which holds the thread to DB2 COS. So the agent in DB2 Connect holds the thread to DB2 COS, and when a client requests a new connection, it actually connects to the agent in DB2 Connect and gets therefore a thread assigned. And the purpose of this connection pooling was to reuse threads to DB2 and avoid the repeated processing of creating those threads and then afterwards terminating those threads, which are both relatively expensive operations. This connection pooling was turned on when with the parameter numpool agent, which is smaller or maximum equal to the max agent parameter, and the max agent is the maximum number of connections which were allowed from DB2 to DB2 COS. One other important point is that those lines were only freed up, those agents were only reusable after the client disconnected from DB2 COS. So this was a critical point for reusability. If a client never disconnects, then this agent would never be available for reusage by another connection. Moving on to the next page, 4. As I said, the max agent is a maximum amount of threads allowed to the DB2 COS system, and the numpool agents is the maximum number of threads which are pooled in the DB2 connection pool. And by default, this is 2% of the max agents, but this value should be adjusted to the average amount of threads which were used at any given time. The drawback of this implementation became obvious pretty fast when it was used with DB2 data sharing. And the reason was that DB2 COS provides usage information to DB2 Connect, but those information can only be used when a new connection to DB2 COS was created. And because the agent was hold on to the thread for a long period of time, this information could not be used. And what it also had in consequence was that those pooled connections could remain to data sharing members that had problems, so which pointed to systems that were 100% busy or did have some other problems. And or even when this member had an outage also, then all those connections would be affected and the application would see an error. And for that reason, DB2 Connect version 7 introduced the connection concentration and SysFlex workload balancing functionality. And I move on to page 5 now. So what this functionality does, it actually introduces another layer, which is called the logical agent. And the logical agent holds the connection to the client versus the agent holding the connections to DB2 COS. And at every commit or rollback time, the connection between the agent and the logical agent are removed, and therefore for each individual transaction, the most available agent could be, or the most available thread could be selected. This functionality could be turned on by setting max connections bigger than max agents. The default is max connections equal max agents, and no connection concentrator is enabled. And the other fact which is not written down in the presentation is that DB2 Connect needs to run either as a gateway or the in-app process needs to be set to no, so that it's not running locally to an application. I move on to the next page, 6. As I said before, max agents is the number of threads to DB2 COS, and max connections is the number of connections from the client to DB2 Connect, and this number needs to be bigger in order to enable this function, the connection concentrator and SysFlex workload balancing. In DB2 Connect, you can either turn on both functions or you have none of them. Connection concentrator cannot be turned on separately from SysFlex workload balancing. There are some other conditions which need to be in place or satisfied in order to make the connection reusability working at commit. And in basics, this is that no resource is still active on the thread in DB2. And examples for that are open withhold cursors. This is a very typical example because the CLI as well as the JDBC standard sets the open cursor with hold, and it needs to be explicitly set to no hold in order to get no hold cursor. Even there are some optimization in DB2 to realize if a result set is already exhausted and implicitly closes it. The second resource, which is very typical, is declared global temp tables. Those must be deleted explicitly or implicitly. And the third biggest reason is that packages are bound with keep dynamic yes, and therefore the thread still holds on to the SQL statements which were executed on this thread. And basically what is shown is that a type 2 TCP/IP or DDS connection would not go inactive, and it's still holding on to those resources. Just as a reminder, any rollback leaves the connection in reusable state. Rollback cleans up everything on the connection and makes it ready for reuse. I move on to the next page, 7. So here are some parallel systems considerations. The first one is that DB2 Connect gets status information for each member in a data sharing group on a regular interval, at least every 3 seconds, or with some special message flows. And it's used in DB2 Connect to balance the connection to each member and route the transaction to the most available member. So if one DB2 member is running on a system which is 100% busy right now because there are some heavy batch jobs running, and the other member is sitting on an idle system, then the second member would get most of the transaction because the workload management information would indicate that this system is much more available than the other one. In case of an outage of one member, only the transactions that are in a unit of work on this particular member would receive a connection failure in version 7 or a resource unavailable in version 8 and would need to drive retry logic. All other connections which are at the unit of work boundary or which are connected to different members are unaffected. So they will remain, the client would basically execute the next transaction without even realizing that the DB2 COS, one DB2 COS member in the data sharing group has a problem. And just as a reminder, for best performance, there should be enough connection in the connection pool to contain all concurrently active clients. And in many cases, this would mean that the max connections, numpool connections is set to a higher value than the default value. Moving on to page 8. The DB2 universal driver introduced similar functionality in FixPack 10, which was delivered with DB2 version 8. And it's basically implementing the same design of connection concentration and SysFlex workload balancing, but there are some small differences. The first one is that the term agent was already used in the universal driver, and therefore the equivalent to the agent in DB2 Connect is the transport in the universal driver. And the transport holds the connection or the thread to DB2 COS. And on the other side, we have logical connections instead of logical agents, which keep the connection to the client, which in this case would be a thread within one JVM. So the connection concentration and SysFlex workload balancing would only work within one JVM, not as a gateway functionality. And similar to the same functionality in DB2 Connect. This one wants to introduce the functionality of reusing server agents at commit or rollback. Moving on to the next page. There are, in order to turn on this functionality, there are two settings. One is optional and one is required. The optional are defined in the global properties file, and those are global properties across the entire JVM. And the properties are max transport objects and min transport objects, as well as max transport object idle time and max transport object wait time. The default values are set in a way that it's limiting, it's not limiting in any way. So if you don't want to introduce a limit, then you would not need to take care of the global properties file. On the next page are the properties which are required in order to turn it on. The max transport objects define the number of, the maximum number of connection which are created from the transport to DB2COS, or the maximum number of threads to DB2COS, and the default value is minus one, which means that there is no limit to the number of threads. And to turn on the functionality, you have two properties. One is enable connection concentrator, which turns on the connection concentration, and the other one is enable sysflex workload balancing, which enables the sysflex workload balancing functionality. Remember, in DB2 Connect, you turned on both together. In the universal driver, you can turn on one or the other, meaning you turn on sysflex workload balancing if you don't want to reduce the amount of connections to the amount of a smaller amount of threads, but you want to have the sysflex workload balancing working across different members. Connection concentrator is really used if you have a large amount of connections and want to reduce it to a smaller amount of threads going to DB2COS. What is very important is that this functionality is based on the JDBC 2.0 data source. There is currently no support in the JDBC 1.2 driver manager, which seems to create a number of issues, especially in a BEA WebLogic environment where the usage of driver manager get connection is still very common. Moving on to the next page, 11. After we basically covered the essential for the connection concentration and sysflex workload balancing in DB2, I want to move on to the connection pool handling in WebSphere. And page number 11 shows the general architecture in WebSphere for handling connection Java objects. This pool is managed in WebSphere by WebSphere, and the principal flow is that the application requests a connection, and the resource adapter component requests a connection out of the connection pool from the JCA connection manager, and hands this connection back to the application. And afterwards, the application communicates with the JDBC driver directly based on this connection without going over the connection manager and the connection pool. So the application sends the request to the resource adapter, and the resource adapter passes the request directly to the JDBC and SQLJ driver to the database server. Moving on to the next page, page 12. This is a screenshot on how to define the connection pool in WebSphere. And the most important way or parameters which need to be set is max connection and min connection. The max connection is the maximum of connection objects which are managed in the WebSphere connection pool, and the minimum connections are the number of connections which are always held in the pool, even they are not used for a defined period of time. Another important value or parameter is the unused timeout, and we go back to this value later on in a more detail, but it's basically defining the time period a connection is not used or sits in the connection pool unused, and then will be closed until the minimum connection amount is reached. So, for example, if I have max connection set to 10, then my maximum amount of connection in the pool is 10. And if I have 10 connections sitting in the pool unused, then after 1,800 seconds, those connections will be closed until I reach the minimum connections amount, which are set to 1 on the screenshot. So those are the most important values. The other values are, for example, purge policy defines what happens to connection pool if a connection returns a stale connection condition. And the option is that I want to recycle all connection objects inside the pool or only the one which got the stale connection condition. Moving on to the next page, 13. As I said before, that the connection objects are maintained by WebSphere. And the intention is that besides saving the effort to create a thread to DB2 and terminate the thread to DB2, it also saves the creation and destroying of the connection object in Java. And because this object is pretty complex, it's relatively expensive to create and to destroy. And the second important point is that the connection object also holds references to the prepared statement object, and if the connection object is destroyed, all the underlying references are closed as well. So it means all the prepared statement objects on this connection are closed as well. So this has a pretty big impact. Frequently closing and opening connection objects in WebSphere would impact performance negatively. Moving on to the next page, page 14. And this is basically the combined scenario of WebSphere going via DB2 Connect to DB2 COS. And in this scenario, the connection concentration and dysflex workload balancing is not turned on. As you can see, we only have the agents holding the connection to the thread, but not the logical connections. And as you can see, the connection objects sitting in the connection pool hold on to the connection objects in the JDBC driver and therefore hold on to the agent going all the way down to DB2. And therefore, the connection pool in the DB2 connect is basically not in effect for exactly this scenario where you have an application over DB2 Connect going to DB2 COS, because the agent will never be available for reuse by another connection, because the connection object in WebSphere holds onto the agent for the lifetime, which is normally the lifetime of the WebSphere system. So therefore, it's recommended that the connection pool in WebSphere should be sized and tuned properly, and then the connection pool in DB2 Connect is of less importance. It's very important, because and another reason is that the connection object in WebSphere is a more complex, contains more information than just the physical thread information, and so by reusing the connection object in WebSphere, you save more work and more cycles than just by reusing the agent or the thread in DB2 Connect. Moving on to the next page, 15, this shows the second typical scenario where, in this case, the DB2 universal driver, SysFlex workload balancing and connection concentration is turned on. And in this case, we recommend that you turn on both the connection pooling and SysFlex workload balancing and connection concentration so that you exploit the full DB2 data sharing, workload balancing, and transparent failover capabilities. And when we go through the picture, you see that the connection objects in WebSphere have aligned to the logical connection in the universal driver, but the line between the logical connection and the transport is only drawn, or those two are only connected, if this connection is used for a unit of work. As soon as this transaction is committed or rolled back, then this line is removed and the transport is available for reuse by another logical connection. And this way, and each time a new line is drawn between a logical connection and a transport, the universal driver determines which transport or which thread to DB2 COS is the most available one and would get this transport. This could even mean that a transport to one DB2 COS's member is closed and then it's reopened to a different member if this member has more capacity to contain work. What we really don't recommend, which is not really clear on this picture, is that you really don't want to concentrate logical connection to transport in an application server environment. I would rather recommend to size the connection pool in WebSphere correctly, so that any additional requests are queued behind the connection pool in WebSphere instead of the WebSphere handing out connection objects and then the requests are queued behind transports because the transports are not all in use and none is available at that given point in time. So the in the application server scenarios, there should be always sufficient amount of transport to solve all logical connections, except the case where you have many data sharing or many data sources defined in WebSphere, but all pointing to the same database server, to the same DB2 COS server. Moving on to the next page. There are some more considerations which came up lately. If customer want or users want to exploit the high availability functionality in DB2 data sharing, they need to have the threads going inactive, meaning that they do not hold on to resources. Some customers decide to use Keep Dynamic Guest, as I discussed earlier, this will not allow the thread to turn inactive, and the WebSphere and DB2 connection pool should be set up in a way that the idle thread timeout in DB2, it's a CPOM in DB2, is actually set to a higher value than the unused time in WebSphere. And the goal is that WebSphere is under control and closes the connection object in an orderly fashion before DB2 times out this connection or this thread, which leads to a stale connection condition in WebSphere, which is always causing problems for WebSphere application. So what we want to achieve is that WebSphere closes unused connection in an orderly fashion instead of DB2 canceling out threads, and WebSphere needs to detect that the thread, that the connection is not valid any longer and has to do additional error logic, which is causing complication once in a while if this is not properly handled. And the second consideration is that if connections cannot turn inactive, then the minimum connections in the WebSphere connection pool should be set to zero, and the connection unused time should be set to a max value of 10 to 15 minutes, so that connections which are not used are freed up in a reasonable amount of time, and therefore also free up unused resources in DB2, because an active thread holds on to resources in DB2, and it can accumulate quite a lot if those are held on for extended period of time and it's not used. So again, if threads are not going inactive, then the idle thread timeout should be higher, in DB2 should be set to a higher value than the unused time in WebSphere, and the minimum connection should be set to zero, so that if no connection is used in WebSphere, that after about 10-15 minutes, all the threads in DB2 COS disappear, and therefore allow for free up resources and also allow for maintenance and so on. And also long-living threads are more exposed to problems like storage leaks also than if DB2 has a chance to recycle those threads and clean up everything. Moving on to the next page. So after we discuss the connection pooling, I want to move on to the DB2 statement caching. The statement caching or dynamic statement cache in DB2 was introduced with version 5. And at that point in time, it was realized that the dynamic SQL execution becomes more and more frequent. And to optimize this processing in terms of optimizing the prepare step. So basically, the dynamic statement cache allows applications to reuse and share prepared SQL statements in DB2 under a number of conditions. First, the SQL is a select, update, delete, or insert. And then the statement text needs to be identical. This is especially important when literals are used, because if a literal is different for each execution, then the statement text would be different, and this would not result into a hit in the dynamic statement cache. Even the STL statement without the values is identical. Also, the authorization ID needs to be the same, so a different authorization ID could not execute the statement which was prepared by a different, by another authorization ID. And then there are some other values which need to match, like the current function path value and so on, which are not as obvious and important. The global cache is turned on by a CPOM value, cached in equals yes. Important is that the statement text and the executable of the prepared statement are both kept in the EDM pool for reuse, and the reuse is across all threads. It's a global caching across all threads. The reuse was bind option disables the use of the cache. So if a package or plan is bound with reuse was, then the statements in this package or plan are not cached at all. In order to turn on the local cache, the packages need to be bound with keep dynamic yes. So the local cache is on a package level, not on a system level. And what it does, it keeps the prepared statement in the thread stores across commit. So the local cache is specific to a given thread, so you can have the same STL statement cached in multiple threads if they are executed before in across multiple threads. But it allows to reuse those statements without re-preparing after commit. Otherwise, after commit, every statement, every prepared statement is deleted. And the CPOM value maxkeepd limits the total number of STL statements across all threads. So every time the at commit, it checks that maxkeepd limit is reached or not, and then threads are deleted, prepared statements are deleted from the threads. What is important is that the statement text is always cached in the local cache. So that's very important. Only the executable is deleted if the maxkeepd limit is reached. Moving on to the next page, 18. This is a usage or an example of how the prepare activity looks if no caching is in place. So I have a program A, which prepares a statement and then executes it twice, and it has a connection to a thread in DB2COS, and it would do a full prepare to determine the executable of the statement and then execute the statement as often as required. A program B, which goes to execute the SQL statement on a different thread, would also do a full prepare in order to get the executable, would execute it, but important at commit, this executable is deleted. So if the program B would execute the same statement after commit, it would get an SQL error -514 and -518. And so it needs to re-prepare after commit in order to get the executable of the statement, which is also a full prepare before it can execute it. So you see that a full prepare is basically executed very frequently, and if you know that a full prepare is about 3-4 times the cost of an average insert, update, delete, or simple select, then you see that this can have a pretty significant impact in overall performance and CPU utilization. On page 19, I added an example of how it would, the same processing would look when the global caching is turned on. As discussed, the global caching is located in the EDM pool. And what happens is, at the first full prepare of a statement, this statement's executable is stored in the EDM pool. And then when program B comes around, instead of doing a full prepare on the same statement, it actually looks up the statement in the EDM pool and would just copy the executable into the thread storage, which we call a short prepare, which basically saves determined parsing of the statement and parsing and executing the access pass determination and so on. But what is important, after commit, this prepared statement is still deleted. So if after commit the prepare is executed again, it gets a new copy out of the global cache into the local thread storage in order to execute it. So what I get is, basically every prepare execution after the first prepare would be a copy of the executable of the statement into, from the EDM pool into the thread storage, instead of executing a full prepare every time. But I still would get SQL error -514 and -518 if I execute a statement after commit without re-preparing it. Moving on to the next page, 20. As I already mentioned, the full prepare is pretty expensive. So saving this full prepare has an overall saving in the system usage. And the global dynamic statement caches the statement text as well as the executable of the statement. And this dynamic statement cache is located in a data space by default in version 7, and it's located above the 2 gig bar in version 8. So the global dynamic statement cache should not put pressure on the overall storage usage in DB2, DBM1 address space. And as I said, looking up the statement in the global cache and copying it over from the global cache into the thread storage is called short prepare. So if you use DB2PE or DB2PM to review your effectiveness of the dynamic global dynamic statement cache, you would see a number of full prepare every time a different statement is executed, but the majority of the statements are actually reflected via a short prepare. So a typical hit ratio for global dynamic statement cache should be around 80% to 90% or higher. Otherwise, there are some problems with, for example, using literals or so on. And important that there are no prepared statements that are kept in the thread storage across commits. So commit cleans up everything in the thread storage, and if a statement needs to be re-executed after commit, it needs to be re-prepared. From an overall system perspective, the global dynamic statement cache should be turned on if dynamic SQL is executed in the system. And it's actually the best trade-off between storage consumption and CPU consumption for applications executing dynamic SQL. So you always pay with one or with the other. So either you pay with storage or you pay with CPU, and this is the best balance between the two overall. Moving on to page 21. This is the same example as we had before, but now it shows the flow if a global cache, the global dynamic statement cache is turned on and the local local cache is turned on. And you see program A is executing the statement as the first time, so the flow is unchanged. But program B now prepares, when it prepares the same statement, it would, the first time, it would get a copy from the global statement cache into the thread storage, which we call the short prepare. But after commit, it can execute the statement immediately, because at commit, the prepared statement executable is not deleted. So it does not need to send a prepare again in order to execute the statement after commit. And this is called avoided prepare. So if you look into some DB2PE reports, you would see a number under avoided prepares if you have the local caching turned on. So we basically would save the short prepare if a statement is executed after commit again inside the same thread. Moving on to page 22, just a recap. So the very first prepare is always a full prepare. The first prepare inside a thread is normally a short prepare, because it would find a match in the global cache if it was executed before. For the local caching, the prepared statement is kept in the thread storage across commit, and therefore the same statement can be reused across commit without preparing again. We call it avoided prepares. What you need to keep in mind is that the same prepared SQL statement can be stored in several threads, so it means if you, for example, have 100 threads and a statement is executed on each of those 100 threads, you have the same SQL statement cached 100 times. And for the typical amount of SQL statements, this adds up to a significant amount of storage pretty frequent, pretty fast. The maxkeepd cpom parameter limits the stored executables only, so the statement text is always stored in the thread storage. So even you define maxkeepd and limit the number of statements, your thread storage still grows, because the statement text is always stored, so it's not affected by maxkeepd. Even if the thread storage is not growing as fast, but it's still, I mean, consuming more storage than not using the local caching. And I worked with a couple of users which had the local caching on using Keep Dynamic Yes, but they didn't exploit it, so they still would see a bigger thread storage footprint. Even they don't have the advantage of reusing the statements after commit. So if there's no benefit if the local cache cannot be utilized and exploited. If there's no benefit in it, then keep dynamic should be set to no. So the local caching should not be on. And the important point is that the application logic needs to reflect this, because if the application sends a prepare offer commit, then the local copy is deleted, and it would cause a short prepare copying the executable out of the global cache into the thread storage. So a prepare flown would basically remove the statement as a local cache is not turned on. Important is that, and I think this is already clear, that keep dynamic yes should only be used selectively for applications that have a limited number of SQL statements that are executed very frequently, and the application makes use of the local cache. And it definitely should not be used for DB2 systems that are constrained in DBM1 storage, because thread storage is within the 2 gig limit of the DBM1 address space, and local caching consumes storage within the thread storage, and it can cause DB2 systems problems because of the threads consuming too much storage. So if the DB2 system is constrained in DBM1 storage, keep dynamic yes should not be even touched. It should be a strong no-no. Moving on to the next page. So after we walk through the dynamic statement cache as it is provided by DB2, now we move on to what WebSphere is doing about the prepared statement object cache. Remember, WebSphere maintains a Java environment, and everything is reflected as an object. So a prepared statement in DB2 is reflected by a prepared statement object in WebSphere. So WebSphere manages a cache of the prepared statement objects on a connection basis. So if a prepared statement object is executed on several connections, then there are several prepared statement objects that are cached. And when a prepared statement, a new prepared statement is requested on a connection, then WebSphere looks up if it can find this object in the cache and would return the object out of a cache. And if it's not finding it in the cache, then it would forward the request to the JDBC driver and then flow a prepare to DB2. Creating a new prepared statement object is a costly operation, relatively costly operation, because the prepared statement object does not just hold the link to the prepared statement in DB2, it also holds all the describe information, like all the metadata information. So it's a pretty complex object. And creating and destroying this object incurs some overhead. So it's important to have the prepared statement object cached in an efficient way. Going to page 24, this is a screenshot in the WebSphere admin console which shows where the prepared statement cache size is defined. And it has a red frame in it, its statement cache size, and the default is 10, which is for many applications not sufficient. And remember, this is the number of statements per connection. So this number can also be determined, or there may be an upper limit determined or defined by the WebSphere JVM heap size. But I think the 10 statements is too low and should be increased to whatever the application uses in average. Going on to the next page, this is a pretty busy page, but I tried to walk you through. It shows how the WebSphere prepared statement object cache plays together with a DB2 dynamic statement cache. So on the left side, you have the WebSphere application server executing pretty much the same programs what we had before in our example. On the right side, there's DB2 COS serving those requests. So let's walk through what program A is doing. So program A would get a connection, connection object, and then would, which is reflected by a thread to DB2, and then the follow-on prepare statement request would flow a prepare to DB2, which would lead to a full prepare because it's the very first execution. The executable is stored in the EDM pool in the global dynamic statement cache. And then on the way back, the prepared statement object is stored in the prepared statement object cache. And then the execution is done on this prepared statement object, and the commit deletes the prepared statement or cached prepared statement in the DB2 thread storage, but it keeps the prepared statement object in the cache alive. So if program B comes around and the get connection happens to point to the same thread or to the same connection object as program A used before, then I avoid the construction of the connection object. And then the prepared statement request would actually be avoided because it would find a hit in the prepared statement object cache from the execution of program A before. But the JDBC driver actually keeps track if those objects are in a committed state or not. And the execute actually flows a prepare and execute under the cover, because otherwise we would get an SQL error because the executable of the prepared statement would not be in the thread storage in DB2. So the execute in the Java program leads to a prepare and execute flow to DB2, and the prepare would result in a short prepare because there is no existing copy in the thread storage. It needs to copy the executable from the global cache into the thread storage and then execute the statement. When program B commits, the prepared statement object is kept untouched, but the executable in the thread storage is deleted. So if the next prepare would again reflect or would be a hit in the prepared statement object cache, so I don't need to execute this. But the execute call method call later on results into a chain prepare and execute flow to DB2COS again, and I would see a short prepare again there. And commit would clean up the thread storage. So every time I commit or the program commits, the prepared statement in the thread storage are deleted, and if the next prepare request would result into a short prepare, into a copy from the global dynamic statement cache into the thread storage. So what is important, and I think what is clear from this usage scenario, is that the prepared statement object caching in WebSphere and the global dynamic statement cache in DB2 needs to be turned on and tuned in order to have a well-performing WebSphere DB2 application. The next chart 26 has a variation in a way that the local cache is turned on, and also it shows that program B now happens to get a different connection object. So you see a difference in a way that the get connection of program B would lead to a connection object construction. And the first prepare statement this time would not result into a hit in the prepared statement object cache, because for this connection object, this statement was not executed before. So this first prepare statement call would lead to a constructor call for the prepared statement object. But it would only lead to a short prepare in DB2 COS. So what is important now is after program B commits the first time, the prepared statement method call would lead to a hit in the prepared statement object call, cache in WebSphere. And now, because the keep dynamic yes is defined, the execute... Oh, wait 1 second. I don't have the local cache turned on. So the execute would lead into a prepare and execute. So it would lead into a short prepare as well. So this is the same as before. So the difference in program B is that if I happen to get a different connection object in WebSphere, then I go through the connection object construction and also the prepared statement object construction. So I end up with a second copy of the prepared statement object for the same statement. And typically for larger WebSphere or average to larger WebSphere installation, you have 100 and above connection objects. So you end up with... in average, or after a while, you end up with a prepared statement object in every connection. So you have multiple copies sitting in the JVM heap. Okay, now comes the chart which I wanted to refer earlier already. In this example, in DB2, the local cache is turned on as well. And the difference is that now the JDBC driver knows that it's the packages are bound with keep dynamic yes. So the prepare statement call is not flowing to DB2 because it leads into a hit in the prepared statement object cache. And then the execute now only flows to execute because the JDBC driver knows that the prepared statement was executed before on this thread, and it does not need to flow prepare again after commit. So I save the, with keep dynamic yes, I save the prepare flow with, together with the execute flow after commit, And this leads to avoided prepares in DB2. So each time I execute the same statement again, I just execute it and refer to the executable in the local statement cache. So it basically, you go through the flow once per thread, and then everything is ready to use, and every subsequent execution uses the prepared statement object in the WebSphere cache, as well as the executable of the statement in the DB2 local dynamic statement cache. The next page, page 28, has the instruction how to turn keep dynamic yes on with the universal driver. Keep dynamic yes is not supported with any of the legacy drivers. So what you have to do is you bind the JCC packages with keep dynamic equals warm into a different collection ID. So you define a different collection with minus collection. And then on the WebSphere data source definition, you define a property minus keep dynamic equals warm. This is how the JDBC driver knows that it can skip the flow of the prepare together with the execute. And also the JDBC collection, this is the collection name which was previously defined in the bind package statement. The chart also has a measurement which was done in our environment in SVL. So it shows 9% ITR improvement on the Unix side. So the WebSphere was running on AX. And it showed a 20% ITR improvement on the DB2 COS side, which is pretty, for many applications, could be a pretty significant CPU saving. But as I said before, there are some considerations to use it, and I listed them again on page 29. So the pro is that I avoid the prepare of a statement after commit, which saves CPU cycles on the application server as well as DB2. But the contra is that the statements are saved on a thread level and the storage consumed by it can be significant. And as I said, it's not recommended for storage constrained systems. And the other impact, which can be significant as well, is that the distributed threads cannot turn inactive. I discussed this before in the connection handling, because keep dynamic yes holds on to DB2 resources, which all the SQL statements executed. The thread cannot go inactive. And this basically disables the transaction workload balancing in a data sharing environment. So I cannot get transaction workload balancing if I use keep dynamic yes, which is a serious consideration as well. And again, this is only recommended for applications with a limited amount of SQL statements that are executed very often. And it's definitely not recommended for applications with large number of SQL statements that are executed infrequently, because you consume a lot of storage without having the benefit, or really having a significant benefit of it. So the global dynamic statement cache in DB2 is more than sufficient to cover these cases. And there's some maintenance in V8. It's from the early days of V8, so I think everybody should have it applied now, but I still want to listen it. Okay, let's summarize what we covered in the presentation. So in terms of connection pooling, if DB2 data sharing is not used, then the connection pool closest to the application should be used, which is in the WebSphere DB2 configuration, the WebSphere connection pool. This would, the same recommendation would apply to other application servers as well, like SAP, for example, manages its own connection pool, then SAP would do the job, and then the connection pool in the universal driver or in DB2 connect, no, for SAP and DB2 connect would not be efficiently utilized. If DB2 data sharing is used, and all the advantages should be exploited, then the connection pool of the application server should be used, and DB2 connect or the universal driver type 4 connection concentrator, SysFlex workload balancing. And the reason is to get all the availability features which come with DB2 data sharing, and also get the transaction workload balancing. In terms of dynamic statement cache, the recommendation is to always use the WebSphere prepared statement object cache and the global dynamic statement cache in DB2. So this should always be set up. The local dynamic statement cache should be only be used for applications that use a limited amount of SQL very frequently, and DB2 is not storage constrained. And as a reminder, SQLJ, which executed static SQL, would not use dynamic statement cache and would have equal or better performance than dynamic SQL with 100% hit ratio in the local and global cache. So for the best combination of performance and availability, SQLJ with using static SQL would actually be the best choice. Okay, so the next page, page 31, has some references where more details could be looked up. So this is all from my side. We still have a couple of minutes to answer some questions. So I'm more than welcome to answer them.
Star 1 for questions. If you have any questions for our presenter today, that's star 1 on your touchtone telephone. And we'll go first to Arthur Lastra of Verizon. Please go ahead.
Yes, I've got a question on page 14, I believe it is. You talked about which connection pool should you use. And you, in this particular FOIA, you're saying if not connecting to a data sharing group, use the pool closest to the application. I want to make sure I understand this. The way I read this diagram is that connection pool that's maintained inside the WebSphere app server, basically it is maintaining its connection to the DB2 Connect agents even after the client disconnects. So in other words, that database connection pool with the individual WebSphere connection objects, they are maintaining their connection to the DB2 Connect physical agent.
Yes.
Even at, because I noticed little red X's, and to me that kind of indicated, oh, when the client disconnects, he's going to break that. But that's not true, right?
No. So the point of client disconnect at connection close, the point is at connection close. And because connection pool keeps the connection open, This would only happen if the connection object is removed from the pool and closed.
Okay, so that's only when the maybe you bring down the WebSphere server.
Yes.
Or you reach some threshold where it's been idle inside WebSphere or whatever, you know, they need those thresholds, and he's really going to then disconnect from the back end.
Yes. So when the application closes the connection, then the WebSphere would just put the connection back into the connection pool from a JDBC driver perspective and beyond towards DB2 COS. This is an open connection, and it's visible as an open connection.
So it's connected, but it may be, because a commit has been flowed, it may be, there may be, you know, no thread. There's not an active thread is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, if every recommendation is followed, then the thread between agent 1 and DB2COS should turn inactive and should not hold on to resources in DB2COS.
Right. So we're maintaining a connection from the Java connection pool to the physical agent to DB2. But it could be, you know, we could have an inactive DBAT on the other side there.
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
And we'll take our next question from Vance Luis, Infodemic. Please go ahead.
Hello. The question is on page 17. And it's about the authorization ID that should be the same. I read in some documentation that this authorization could also be, if it is a subset that is equal than or larger than the subset of the authorization ID that initially put the statement in the statement cache.
Yes, this is correct.
But I never got that to work, even with two identical user IDs having exact the same authorization. I saw no reuse of the statement cache. So my question is,
You have two individual user IDs connecting to DB2, but they belong to the same group?
Yes.
For example. No, then the authorization ID is what determines, so they would have two separate authorization IDs.
Okay, so the primary authorization ID is different, then there will be no reuse of the statement cache.
Actually, let me think. Yeah, that's true.
Okay, so the primary authorization ID needs to be the same, and this talk about subset authorization is a documentation error then.
What I'm thinking about is that if the setCurrent SQL ID is set to a common value, then, so for example, you have a user 1 and user 2, but they belong to group app 1, and the setCurrent SQL ID is set to app 1, for example, as a JCC custom property, then both users would have a head in the statement cache.
Yes, but if they connect through their own primary ID, then there won't be a hit because the authorization ID won't be the same then.
Exactly. So if two different user IDs want to reuse the same statement, then they would need to set the current SQL ID to the ID of the group they belong to, and they are authorized to do this.
Okay.
So it would be one additional setup step in order to achieve it. But the current SQL ID is not set, then they would basically look like two different users to DB2, and they would not get a hit in the dynamic statement cache.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. I have a second question, if I may.
Yeah.
It's on page 21. It's where the example is about the statement caching, and especially to avoid a prepare when you're using the local cache. If there would be, after the commit, if there would be a second prepare, I assume that also would result in an avoided prepare?
No, no, this is what I mentioned before. If a prepare is flowing after a commit and it really comes to DB2, then the prepare would delete the prepared statement which is cached in the thread and would get a new copy from the global cache.
Okay.
So it would lead to a short prepare.
Yes.
And this is why I stress that if the application needs to be aware of the handling, so if the application flows a prepare, then basically the local cache is not in effect.
Yes, you need the end point is that you need a program for the effective use of the local statement cache.
Yeah, but the benefit with WebSphere and the dynamic statement cache in WebSphere is that the dynamic statement cache, if you have the prepared statement object cache in WebSphere, if you have a hit, then this prepare request never flows to DB2.
Okay, in combination with keep dynamic yes.
And then keep dynamic yes starts to be efficient because the universal driver would not flow a prepare when the execute method is called. And therefore, from a DB2 perspective, you would only see the execute after a commit. Even the Java application has a prepared statement call in it.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Once again, that's star one if you have a question. Star one for questions. And we'll go next to Konstantin Tedenev, UPS. Please go ahead.
Mariela, quick question on connection pooling. Let's presume we have an application with variable workload. Within this half an hour, let's say we have, we need, let's say, 30 connections to DB2. We're utilizing 30 concurrent threads, and then it eases up, and then goes up again. We've seen examples of test connection being done by an application server on behalf of the applications running there. And we've seen it happen in BA WebLogic. What does the universal driver, when it's set up to handle Type 4 JDBC driver, what does it do? What does it offer in terms of test connection?
The test connection is really to prevent a WebSphere connection to go stale. Because many WebSphere application WebLogic, many application in a web application server, it's not specific to WebSphere, it's general, mm-hmm. Have problems handling stale connections condition. If you use the JCC type 4 connection and this connection goes inactive, There is a very low chance that the connection goes stale. You really need to have a TCP/IP problem or something like this. And therefore, I would not recommend to do this frequent test connection execution. Because each time a test connection is done, it's actually flowing a simple SQL statement all the way up to DB2, and it turns an inactive thread active again, and then it's executing the statement for nothing, just to test, and then returns it and goes inactive again. So this was introduced to handle connections to database server which don't have the concept of inactive threads. And I don't think you need it for connection which go nightly inactive, like the universal driver type 4 connections.
Okay, so this problem is endemic to BA WebLogic or similar drivers, application servers in this case.
Yeah, I think you can do something similar in WebSphere, but it's not turned on by default as it is in WebLogic. in WebLogic, I think the default is that it's turned on.
Okay, thank you.
And we'll go back to Vance Lee in Podemic for a follow-up. Please go ahead.
Okay. We have tested the universal driver in combination with the data source, and what we saw is that in our test situation, we had a very small amount of ID back connections. And when we were overdoing the number of connections from the data source, everything froze, and it had to do with the fact that for the pool to be able to close the connection, it needs to set up a new connection to DB2 to kind of give the close command to DB2. But if you're already at ID max, then it can't handle the close within DB2. And this, in combination with a large number of data sources in a WebSphere environment run by WLM, we can quickly run out of connections in DB2. Has this logic changed recently?
No, but I never heard of this problem before. So
we've put in a PMR, I had some discussion with the lab, and basically the problem was that first the connection, or so to speak, the administration in the WebSphere connection pool was deleted, and thereafter the connection to DB2 was deleted. But since that connection could not be deleted because you were already at ID back maximum number of connections, that connection got never closed, but could not be reused within the connection pool in the data source.
You know, could you do me a favor? And I have my email address on the title page. Could you send me an email with a PMR number and a short description? Because I like to follow up on it. It sounds not right.
Now, that was my impression after discussion with the lab as well. The sequence of things that is done is not correct, but I'll send you an email and discuss it by email.
Yes, this would be nice, because I can't say anything else about it, so I would need to follow up with the details, which I would like to do.
Okay.
Thank you.
I will send an email. Thank you.
As a final reminder, that's star one if you have a question at this time, star one. And it would appear that we have no further questions at this time, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you.
This does conclude today's conference. We thank you for your participation. You may disconnect at this time.